Well, thank you, Megan and team. Great to sing those worship songs. And I was thinking there as we were singing, Your Grace is Enough, but the internet sure helps also, Lord. So welcome those who are live streaming, and sorry we were a little delayed with the internet going down. Thank you, Steve. You know, of all the things I pray for Sunday morning, I got to admit, I have not prayed for the internet, but thank you for stepping in and helping rectify that. But I don't apologize to those of you who gathered here, because starting 10 minutes late, that's all right. Ryan, you had the right idea there. You turned your chair around and you just started chatting with the people around you. And you guys might think, based on today's message, that I had planned it that way, but I promise you, Steve, I did not mess with the router at all, or whatever caused the delay today. So great to have you here as we continue talking about rhythms for healthy souls. And today in particular, we want to talk about the spiritual rhythms that relate to how we relate one to another. Because now is a good time for us to take stock of our relationships. It's time to re-examine our friendships and perhaps to prune or expand our circle of relationship. Now, pruning may sound a little harsh, but it has a purpose to it, right? You picture an apple tree that it needs to be pruned, you know, and so it's a beautiful apple tree that has lots of leaves, but year after year it doesn't produce any apples. Finally, the owner takes the chainsaw and chop, 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 cuts away at it. And it looks kind of bare, and you think, uh-oh, is this overdone? Like, is this apple tree going to die? But then it allows the light to get in, and sure enough, next fall, there's apples on that apple tree. The pruning was necessary for the fruit to bear. And as we, move ahead with our lives, you know, it may be time for some of us to ask the question, why? Why do I get together with that certain person? Why do I get together with that group of people? To prune and expand our circle of relationships. What relationships are missing in your life that could help you move forward with your God-given purpose? What relationship, whether an old relationship or a new relationship, that you would be in a circle with that person or persons, and they could ask you the right questions that you could press into what God is saying to you in this time period? In church, we have rows. And good things happen in rows. I love our church services on Sunday mornings. Good things happen in rows, but the best things happen in circles. See, rows happen here on Sunday mornings, but circles can happen 7 days of the week. And I want you to ponder your relational circle. Because you will spiritually drift if you do not have intentionality in that relational circle. Where you are at spiritually a year from now will have a lot to do with who is in your relational circle and what's happening in that circle in this next year. There's a friendship in the Bible that is one of the best known friendships that I think it has a lot to teach us in terms of our relational circle and pressing into God's truth for us. So I invite you to turn there with me to 1 Samuel chapter 18. 1 Samuel chapter 17 is a well-known story there as David goes into the Valley of Elah and he defeats that giant Goliath and he becomes this national hero. But Saul becomes jealous of him, and Saul sees David as a threat to his kingship. And in chapter 16, I mean, David and Saul are friends. In fact, we read there that Saul loved David. Then chapter 17, we have this battle, and the whole nation of Israel notices. And then in chapter 18, we have the souring of this relationship. But it's interesting what the narrator does here is, rather than continuing on with the story, he deliberately inserts this friendship, this new friendship that's emerging in chapter 18. Let me read the first four verses. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. We see here that spiritual friendship shows itself in love and giving. This is the beginning of a rather extraordinary, short-lived friendship between these two guys. Now, my ignorant guess would be that this is an intergenerational friendship. I mean, I don't know for sure. That's why I say it's an ignorant guess. I mean, it could be that Jonathan and David are BFFs, you know, kind of like shows up in the Sunday school papers, you know, these two young kids together. But I'm guessing that Jonathan is perhaps 20, 25 years older than David is. He's been serving in his dad's army since age 20, and he now commands one-third of the armed forces. But regardless of whether it's a peer-to-peer relationship or an intergenerational relationship, it's quite something that this friendship even takes place at all. There's something that Jonathan recognizes in David, that he sees God's hand upon his life. And there's an obvious history between the two, as I read there, that Jonathan became one with David, one in spirit. Or as the ESV translates it, the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. Some people see this as a sexual relationship between the two men. Frankly, there's nothing in the text to indicate that. And I think we're trying to read romantic 21st century notions into this ancient Near Eastern text. We would naturally expect Jonathan and David to be rivals. But instead, this humility on Jonathan's part, that he recognizes God's spirit is in David, and he aligns with him. And so there's unity instead of rivalry. And they form this covenant together, which Jonathan, as the older man, as the prince, initiates this covenant. And it's quite amazing, right, how it's expressed there through love, through giving, through sacrifice. Jonathan took off his robe he was wearing and gave it to David. Wow, that's the royal robe. He is the rightful heir to the throne. But he's passing that along to David, along with his sword and his armor, which again reflects that he sees the royal rights and prerogatives being given to this other man. Let me ask you, in your relational circle, your friendships, what does love, giving, sacrifice, what does that look like in your relationships? We see here in the example of Jonathan what he does for David. Let's keep reading verse 12. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. But all of Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. So we see these contrasting relationships here. Like I said, the relationship between Saul and David is souring. But Jonathan doesn't see it that way. And it's interesting, the author, he uses the word face four times there in that section I just read. That Saul feared David's face, that he stood in awe of his face, that David went out and faced the people. You know, it's almost like a Canadian hockey game there. There's a lot of face-off that's happening. The Lord was with David. Twice I read there that those words. He was with him. And this represents God's rejection of Saul as the king of the nation. And that's why we're told there that Saul is literally, it reads, afraid of David's face. And then Jonathan steps in, the son. And there's something he sees within David. What does he see? his spirit. The Lord was with him. See, a friendship is not just a transactional relationship. What you exchange with another person is your spirit. You don't just exchange information from one another in a relationship. You receive the other person's spirit. The Lord was with David. That's a phrase that's going to be continually mentioned in the narrative. Well, we see in the rest of the chapter that Saul doesn't see this fact. He doesn't sense the spirit in David's life. And in fact, his envy just grows more and more each day. And what does his son Jonathan do in the midst of this? Well, let's pick it up in chapter 19, verse 1. Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out." Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, "Let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life into his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all of Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason?" Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath, "As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death." So Jonathan called David and told him the whole conversation. He brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. We see here that spiritual friendship speaks up for the other person. Jonathan could have been jealous of David with his great victories. He could have talked trash about him to his father, but instead he speaks up in full support of his friendship. And he mentions to his dad there are kind of two arguments. Number one, that David was an innocent man, you know? He had done nothing wrong. And secondly, that he had won great battles for the nation, for his dad. So why was his dad trying to kill him? And we read there that this caused Saul to kind of ponder. Spiritual friendship looks out for the other person. It watches the other person's back. It speaks well of the other person. Now we wish at this point Saul would repent and turn aside from his envy. But unfortunately he doesn't. And in fact he gets more and more obsessed with killing David. And David is forced to flee. His wife helps him escape through a window. And then he begins 10 years of exile. 10 years where God will prepare him for what's next in his life. So let's pick that up in chapter 20, verse 1. "Then David fled from Naoth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, 'What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to kill me?' 'Never,' Jonathan replied, 'you are not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything, great or small, without letting me know. Why would he hide this from me? It isn't so.' But David took an oath and said, 'Your father knows very well that I have found favor in your eyes. And he has said to himself, Jonathan must not know this, or he will be grieved. Yet as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, there is only a step between me and death.' Jonathan said to David, 'Whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you.'" Spiritual friendship is grounded in commitment. Evidently, Jonathan must have been out of the loop on how angry his dad had become towards David. And in fact, since he had talked with his father, there's been 3 assassination attempts upon David's life by Saul. Hence the fear that that I read there in David's voice. You know, what's my crime? Why is he trying to kill me? So David's fearful. He's anxious. He's worried. He's desperate. He's on the run. What does Jonathan, as a spiritual friend, do for him? He speaks words of reassurance to him. He pledges to protect him. He speaks words of commitment Verse 4, whatever you want me to do, I'll do for you. They devise a plan about David hiding and Jonathan speaking to his dad. And then Jonathan reaffirms his covenant with David, again recognizing that David seems to be the heir that God is anointing to be the next king. And then he asks David to remember his family and to show kindness to his family. Because back then, what generally happened when a new king would take power is they would knock off any potential threats and any of the family members of the previous king, they would simply kill them all. And so, later on in the book, we read an amazing story where King David, who's king now, he shows kindness to Jonathan's family by inviting Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, to come and eat at the royal table. Quite a gesture of grace in the midst of rivalry, what they tended to have back then. So Jonathan's going to talk to his dad. And how does the speech go over? Well, let me read one verse. Verse 30. Saul's anger flared up at Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman." Yikes! Obviously, the speech did not go over well with Dad. I don't need to read any more there. So, Saul is so angry, he not only tries to kill David, but he tries to kill his own son, Jonathan. Jonathan managed to escape his dad's attempt, and he meets up with David, and they devise this plan. Jonathan says, "We'll see if it's safe one last time. Why don't I take my bow and arrow out and the servant? I'll shoot some arrows, and if I say to the servant, 'Oh, the arrows are closer, come closer to collect them,' that means it's safe to come back to the palace. Or if I say to the servant, 'No, you're looking too close, go further away,' that's code language to David, 'Hey, it's not safe to come back to the palace.'" And so he says to the servant, "Hey, the arrows are further away." After the servant has collected the arrows, he tells him to take the bow and arrows back to the palace, and then he meets up with David. And it's a tearful meeting. Verse 41. After the boy had gone, that's the servant, David got up from the south side of the stone and bowed before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground. They kissed each other and wept together, but David wept the most. This is the second last time that they will see each other in their lives. This short friendship is going to come to an end. Chapter 21, it's a bit of a strange story there about David faking insanity before another king so he doesn't get killed. Chapter 22 is David assembling sort of a team of misfits to become his army. And then we have chapter 23, their last meeting together. Let's pick it up at verse 14. David stayed in the wilderness strongholds and in the hills of the desert of Ziph. Day after day, Saul searched for him, but God did not give David into his hands. While David was at Horesh in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. "Don't be afraid," he said. "My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father Saul knows this." The two of them made a covenant before the Lord. Then Jonathan went home, but David remained at Horesh. So Jonathan risks his life in going out in the wilderness there to meet with David. No doubt if Saul or one of Saul's army members would have found that out, they would have had Jonathan killed instantly. And they have that little talk there, and you heard how I read how Jonathan has this desire that David will one day be king, and then he will be the second in command. That's a desire that never happened. Because before Jonathan became, David became king, Jonathan was killed. And that desire for that friendship to continue, for him to be the right-hand man to David, never happened. Never got realized. But today, we're reading about his legacy. A legacy of spiritual friendship. And that spiritual friends help others grow closer to God. I love verse 16 there. Why don't we stick it up on the screen? Let's read it together. And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. Don't be afraid, he said. That's what friends do for one another. Now, we don't know exactly what that meant. Like, how did he actually help him find strength in God? Maybe it was just words of reassurance. Maybe it was promises of God that he shared with him. But in some way, he encouraged him. And he spoke words of truth. Words of hope. Don't be afraid. Likewise, you and I, in our circles of friendship, we can help strengthen others in their relationship with God. Have you done that in the past? Can you do that in the future? Can you share the promises of God with others to help them in their relationship with God? Good things happen in rows, but the best things happen in circles. Like I said, I love our Sunday gatherings, but I really get fired up when I gather in circles, and I've done so recently. And just seeing people's lives changed. Seeing the Spirit at work. The pandemic has been a time of disruption in our relationships. But in the midst of it, God is still at work. I'm going to invite May up at this time. And it was a couple weeks ago, if you want to grab the microphone there, May. A couple weeks ago on Sunday morning here, that Sunday where we were asking about what has God done in your life or what has God said to you during this pandemic. And May and I, we had a brief conversation after church outside there. And I remember the conversation because I remember a phrase that you used. You said, well, during this pandemic, we formed a triad with five people. You remember saying that? And so can you maybe tell us how this group came about?
I'll just give you a little background about me. We've been at this church for about 20 years now, my husband and I, and we've been a part of Pastor Steve's D group for quite a few years, and it's a pretty big group. Like, there's been sometimes like up to 20 people, and even though the pandemic has really disrupted that rhythm for us. We continued to meet via Zoom, and you know, that was great, but we really missed the face-to-face contact and the spontaneous conversations that we'd have and the way we would, you know, encourage one another just as we'd pass by at church and stuff like that. So it really was something we missed, having the ability to just connect randomly almost and have that opportunity to encourage and support one another. Mm-hmm. So the pandemic affected us that way. It also, for me, the last year and a half has been a bit of a struggle. I found out beginning of last year that I actually had breast cancer. So 2020 was a year of surgeries, appointments, tests, treatment, and recovery time. And the two elements together, the pandemic and my illness, forced me into complete isolation. I, had the support of my D group, but I was feeling very alone and very disconnected with God and with people. I was, you know, tired. I was anxious. I was stressed out. And, I was just saying, how am I going to change that? Like, how am I going to get out of this place? And in January of this year, our D group was doing a study on just how can we grow in godliness and how can we, grow in discipleship. And one of the members suggested that we do a daily Bible reading. through a devotional. And, you know, I've done these before. And, you know, when you're tired, you know, it's hard to keep it up. It's hard mm-hmm. to just get the Bible open and start reading. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could form a small group that could do a devotion together? So I asked some of the ladies in my D group if they'd be willing to come together and maybe go through something on the YouVersion Bible app. And some of the ladies said, sure, let's try it. And so that's how our triad started.
Okay, beautiful. Yes, and thank you for sharing a bit of your story there. And I'm sorry, but I'm glad that you're getting support from others. So how do you and the other ladies connect? What does that kind of look like in a given week?
Well, because of the pandemic, we were not encouraged to gather face-to-face, mm-hmm. and so we formed a chat group on WhatsApp, and we just started picking out devotions from the Bible app and going through them every day. Mm-hmm. The beauty of this, of course, is that it's a safe platform, you know, for us to connect and communicate. And it's flexible. You know, we all have busy schedules and we're all doing different things. Some of us have young kids. Some of us are working full time. So this gave us the freedom to read the passages on our own and then, you know, think about them. And then we would post comments to each other. Mm. And even though we do it every day, we don't post every day, but we do connect, you know, regularly, and we use it as an opportunity to share what we learned about in the Bible, how it applies to our life, and what God's been doing. So the other thing that has been great about our group is that it's quite open-ended. Like, we've had a few ladies leave and a few ladies join, you know, throughout the last 7 months that we've been together. And it's been it's been great because the dynamic of each woman in the group has really made it, you know, wonderful. Mm. They bring their own experiences and they bring their insights, and we all learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see it in your face, May, that this is life-giving for you. And I think I remember the conversation this week, and that's why I reached out to you. Because as you told me about it, it was like, this is a good thing. So can you maybe share the last question about how has it made a difference in your life being in this group of these ladies?
Well, I've had so many benefits from being a part of this. I mean, number one, the accountability. Mm-hmm. Just knowing that other ladies are doing this with me motivates me to have my quiet time every day, to meditate, and then to be able to share things that God has been teaching me. Mm-hmm. And then as the other women are doing the same, like, we're blessing each other. Mm-hmm. And I find that the call to transparency, you know, hiding away during the pandemic wasn't helpful for me. And mm-hmm. so being able to come into a community where I could be authentic and real and honest, and, you know, and there were days where I wasn't okay, but it was okay.
Yeah.
And they were super supportive and accepting, and, you know, they prayed for me, and that was, you know, huge. Another benefit, I think, is just that we all grew in discipleship. We all just built that rhythm back in our lives of connecting, of studying, of sharing, and you know, we began to use our spiritual gifts. I got involved more in sort of the teaching and organizing and encouraging others, and they all also extended their gifts to me and blessed me in different ways. I think that the when you talk about friendship, you know, we didn't know each other that well when we started. Like, as a part of a D group, you know, you have your superficial conversations, but when we formed this smaller group, we got way more intimate and deeper in our conversations, and we learned more about each other than we would in a regular kind of, you know, face-to-face contact. And so that was really wonderful for me to just be able to have the ability to grow friendships with women that I you know, hadn't gotten to know well mm-hmm. before, and they're all from different walks of life. And the enriching experience of just getting to know other people really blessed me and all of us.
Wonderful. I can see that you're blessed and you have blessed others. So thank you for listening to God and initiating this, making this happen, you and the other ladies. So isn't that a wonderful story? Let's give May. And May, what you were saying there just ties in so well with the vision that God had given me. Why don't we stick that slide up on the screen back a few months ago on a Tuesday night. As I thought about our church and I drew these concentric circles in my journal, and the Lord was impressing upon me that we will grow Grace Point in the days ahead from the smallest unit outward. Yeah, we're going to continue to have great Sunday gatherings like we do. But as May just said, that in those smaller gatherings, in the core groups, the groups of three or four, or in her case five, you know, that you can be intimate and honest and real and vulnerable with one another, like she just said. And then we see life transformation happening. And because what we need in our lives is more than a sage on a stage, is we need a guide on the side. See, a lot of churches tend to elevate the sage on the stage, and they talk about the pastor's platform, and they talk about how many views they have, and even in my line of work, they use what's called multipliers to multiply how many people they think are watching each of the screens in order to raise the numbers up. But do you think that's what Jesus is concerned about? Or does Jesus concern about making disciples? That's what our call and our commission is. Good things happen in rows. Great things happen in circles. And so we will continue to have our circle gatherings, whether it's using technology like May just shared, you know, or a socially distanced small group, a D group gathering. You know, we probably can't yet launch our mid-size gatherings, just because those of you who have large homes probably don't want 20 or 40 people over, or we can't, book our clubhouses at our townhouse complexes in these days. But we will do that, you know, in the days ahead, and of course continue to have our Sunday gatherings. The gospel is not restricted in the midst of this pandemic. Our vision to be a movement of disciples who make disciples isn't restricted in this time period. But you need others for that to happen. Yes, you want to pursue intimacy with Jesus. Yes, you want to read the Bible and pray. But reading the Bible and praying alone will not have you spiritually flourish the way God intends. Key word there is alone. As May reminded us, we need others, and others need us. Rhythms for healthy souls. Friends, in the Jesus-shaped life of up, in, and out, we need the in-life together with others. And what will be your rhythm this fall? What will that look like for you? As I said, is it time to take stock of our relationships, to prune or expand our relationships? Because this rhythm of life with others is crucial. Not only do you feel better, but you will become better. And it will be life-giving for you. You know, we've all been to those meetings which kind of drain us. Like maybe your strata meetings. Who's been to a hellish strata meeting? I continue to hear those stories, horror stories of strata meetings. But the kind of gatherings that May was describing there are soul enhancing, right? Life giving. So you see there in your sermon notes, if you're following or if you're on the app, you can click there on the program, and you see there under the program or there in your sermon notes, two statements. Yes, I'm interested in being part of a D group or a core group. A core group would be a smaller group, a group of three or four. You know, If that's your desire, you just go ahead and press that. It'll open up your email program, and you don't even have to type anything in there. Rebecca filled it all in there for you, and it'll be sent to me. And we as a staff will help you to connect you in either a D group, if that's sort of the appropriate venue, or in a smaller gathering, a triad or a quad. Now, if you're interested in being part of an intergenerational quad, that second statement there, you go ahead and press that. Perhaps you have friends in your circle that are peers, you know? Let's say you're in your 20s or 30s, and you've got that in your circle, but you're missing people from another generation. Or let's say you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s, and you've got that group, but cross-generationally, you're not investing in anyone, or no one's investing in you. Maybe you want to be part of an intergenerational group. You go ahead and click that, and again, that will fire an email to me. Rhythms for healthy souls. The soul is shy. When there's conflict, when there's fear, when there's noise, the soul tends to flee for cover. But it comes out when there's safety, a safe relationship, when there's unconditional love, when there's acceptance, when there's grace, when there's accountability, the very things that May was talking about. In our story here today, Jonathan's life was cut short. He had plans and dreams, like I said, but they weren't realized. But here we are, thousands of years later, talking about his spiritual legacy through his friendship. That's the kind of stuff you talk about at a funeral. Like, who's going to talk at your funeral? Who's going to be at your funeral? I mean, like, people who want to be. Like, not your cousin who says, well, I guess I should go. I was related to him, you know. Like, no, the ones who want to be there and who will get up to speak. And at your funeral, there will be rows. But the ones that get up to speak will be the ones who you were in a circle relationship with. You invested in their life, and they invested in you. Good things happen in rows, but the best things happen in circles. Friends, I invite you to join me on this journey of discipleship happening in circles. God loves you. He wants you to flourish. And in order for that to happen, it'll take others with you in your circle. What does that look like for you? Let's pray. I'll just take a few moments of silent prayer right now. I believe that God brought you here, or God has you watching this for a purpose. Listen to him right now. What is he calling you to? Oh, Jesus, I thank you that this life with you, that's in you, we discover and rediscover as we journey with others in this life. Thank you how we can sharpen one another, whether in casual passing conversations or whether in deep, intimate relationships in a circle. But Jesus, you're continuing to grow us to be more like you. And we need that in these days. Thank you that you gave it all for us, so that we would be the church, this people called out, a community. And may it be said about us, as was said about the early church, oh, how they love one another. In your name I pray. Amen.